Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about family agreements, some ideas on implementing, and how they affect the family. You can also go to mystronghome.com, and you can download the entire workshop. It includes all the assessments and worksheets for free. And also, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at 4@fourthstream.com. That's the number 4@fourthstream.com.
Family agreements are something that is kind of rolls all the way through family life. At first, you make them between a couple, mm-hmm. because you're deciding, okay, well, what's discipline going to look like? What's the attitude of our home? You know, how often are we going to have dinner together and breakfast?
What does our communication look like? Because whatever we do between the two of us is going to happen among the family.
But then as the children grow, all of a sudden, you know, you have more individuals involved in the process, and those family agreements have to become spoken in different ways. So you model them, but then as you get to those pre-teenage years, sometimes those things need to be nailed down. This is how we do family. And that's kind of what we're talking about today. What are the family agreements that we make?
Yeah, one of the ways that we began to come to this was a story early on in our marriage of our family life. We had a daughter who was maybe 4 or 5, and she wasn't talking to you one day. And she was just being a little distant, and you sat down with her and said, "Honey, I thought we were always going to talk about everything." And she looked at you and she said, "Did I say that?" So it became obvious to us that we all had different ideas about what family agreements were, even at an early age. She had decided that there were some things she just wasn't going to talk about.
Yeah, she was going to buy in.
It really taught us that, you know, family agreements have to be family agreements, not just us determining what they are.
Yes. This is our family agreement, whether you like it or not.
Sign on the dotted line.
Well, some of the things that we ran into as we were parenting, the issue of privacy, you know, mm-hmm. how the bathroom is used, and how, you know, your door being shut on your room, and all those different things. The idea that we would respect each other's privacy, that is something that, you know, I grew up in a family of 7 kids, and there was really no such thing as mm-hmm. privacy at all. But we were able to put that into our family where, you know, you respected and considered other people's privacy. So that looked a certain way. It was like, you know, you don't just go bursting through the bathroom door.
Yes, because most homes have locks on the door, but, you know, some older homes don't. And so there are just agreements that have to be made and always adhered to. I did agree in privacy for my teenagers, as, you know, they start feeling like my room is my room.
Yes.
But I really had limits on that, because your room is in my home, is in our home.
Sure.
And
that's a family agreement.
For you to tell me that you can't go in, that I can't go in there, doesn't work. It especially doesn't work if I begin to think you have things going on that we need to know about and talk about. So, you know, if you start to think that there are drugs going on, you start to think that they're just getting into some things I'm not sure about, all of a sudden that privacy, that barrier they want to put up, it can't be a barrier. There's a difference between decent privacy and a barrier.
The next one is a family agreement related to sharing responsibility. The idea that we are all going to pull the family load. And, you know, that looks different as things unfold. And, you know, you can talk about chores and different things like that, but it's really more the heart of all that we are sharing responsibility together, and we are pulling the load of the family together. And to whatever degree you're able to at the age that you are, that's an important thing for you to embrace for the benefit of the family.
Yeah, studies really have shown that kids, you know, while we all grouse about having to do chores, and what a terrible word, but just, you know, we kind of grouse about that list of things we have to do, there are studies that show that when kids are required to do things that are integral, that are important, that aren't just fluff jobs that really could or could not be
done, or jobs that nobody else wants.
Yes, but when they discover that the jobs they do actually make the house run smoother, they it does something to them for them on the inside, on their to their heart that they realize I'm a part of a team, but I'm a part of a family.
Here's a big one related to family agreements, the use of the tongue and how it's going to be used. So every family has their standards about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are families that you can't, wild horses can't drag things from a positive and a negative perspective.
Right.
And then
that's
people
just what I was going to say.
That are motor mouths like myself, that you say what you think. And so using the tongue, and you know, the Bible's pretty clear, you're not going to tame the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a restless organ, mm-hmm. but you can keep it in check and keep it in control. Well, a family has to have a standard for that together. The kinds of words that we share with each other, a good balance of the words of truth as well as the words of life, mm-hmm. To go with valid criticisms of one another.
Yes, you were one who said everything you thought. I was one who didn't say enough. Both of those involve the tongue and the heart. And so there's just a lot to work on there. You know, that we can talk about that forever because couples and families work on that forever. But it is just coming to some agreements about what things we will talk about, what things we will talk about in front of the kids, what things that, you know, it's even sometimes things that happen between kids shouldn't be out in front of all the kids. It just depends on the ages and the issues.
We had four of our grandkids with us, all boys, the other day, and it was just funny. You watch them, and they were in that one of those moods where they couldn't keep their hands off from each other, and it was just like a brawl,
uh-huh.
You know, a kind brawl that was happening. But that's one of our family agreements too: is keep your hands to yourself. Not it's okay to show affection, and that was a good demonstration of affection because mm-hmm. they were just having fun together. But you know, there's that whole idea that you know your rights end where another person's nose begins. And that's something that is a family agreement that you kind of have to keep as a standard because it's a hard thing to learn for people.
Yeah, you were talking about the four grandsons. Our daughter-in-law said she learned a long time ago that in having sons, she learned that often their way of affection is not how a girl shows it, you know, by holding hands or just wanting to sit close. You know, guys tend to show a little more by, you know, a little on the edge of roughhousing. You just have to understand what each of your languages are about affection and touching appropriate.
Although I think that boys, when they get a little bit older, kind of revert to that the girl perspective on holding hands, if I remember that. Here's another family agreement: the unacceptability of tantrums and other childish behaviors. And you know, adults, there's nothing uglier than seeing an adult mm-hmm. throw a tantrum. And I would say that's true all the way of most adolescents. I don't mind it when I see a 2 or 3 or 4 year old throwing a tantrum and then the parents dealing with
it. Yeah, learning.
It's a very homely thing mm-hmm. to see. It's so unbecoming and it's so self-destructive. So a family agreement is that
that's
we're not going to do that.
That's the issue. It is self-destructive. I think that's why it's important to get to the bottom of it, because ultimately it's hard for them in the future for their jobs. It's hard on them for their future spouses, their future families. So that self-destructive, for me, that's the key word as to why you help your kids not have temper tantrums and how to deal with temper tantrums.
I've got a story about one I could tell that I saw in a store the other day, but it was so brutal.
It's painful.
It was painful. And mm-hmm. I felt so sorry for the child because he was way too old to be having a temper tantrum, and his mom was obviously clueless mm-hmm. about everything leading up to it and everything beyond it. Because here's a young, emerging teenager that is frustrated to anger, and he didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Another issue is tech time, screen time.
Yes.
Is, you know, those really do have to be family agreements, but there has to be kind of something, a help and parameters put on by parents as to what we do with screen time. So, you know, I've heard of families that say at 7 o'clock, it all gets put in a basket.
Click.
Nobody does anything the rest of the
including
evening.
Including
mom and dad. For some families, that just doesn't seem possible, but there has to be some way of turning it off because, you know, the biggest thing I find about tech time is that kids can learn to respond to you. They can be on their phones or whatever they're doing and respond, but what they don't do is initiate. And if you have a family who are all on tech time, all on screen time, no one is initiating. No one is making family communication happen. It's all just responding.
knowing your limits when it comes to media, and obviously we're involved with radio, and we get it, we understand it, but the reality is that it has to fit in with whatever your family agreements are that make the family a healthy environment.
Basically, you have to control it rather than it interrupting and controlling you.
Here was a big one, a family agreement when we moved into the dating standards, because, you know, everybody has a little bit different perspective. Males look at it one way, females look at it another way. You know, I was kind of a shotgun kind of a parent when it came to my daughter.
Well, and I think the other thing is we bring into it our own experiences from our teenage and dating years. And so as parents, we bring those in, and now those tend to shadow the decisions that we make for our kids. You know, some people will say, well, it doesn't matter to me if my daughter dates somebody that's a lot older. You know, maybe you married someone who is older, but that may not be good for your daughter, for where she is emotionally this year.
So when you think about these family agreements that we're talking about, which you can find at mystronghome.com, there are things that you really need to put thought into these kinds of things and have conversation. And then as the kids get older, you need to include them in the conversation about why and, you know, the process and why you do what you do.
Yeah, that's really key what you just said. You bring the kids into it because these are things that need to be looked at really yearly or just, you know, at every stage they go through. These are not once and done agreements. They have a lot of fluidity in them.
What's the standard in the family for criticizing in front of other people? You know, that can be so harmful and so harsh. And of course, we're supposed to criticize one another in the right way in love, speaking the truth in love. It doesn't mean we don't say the truth. We say the truth. But to do that in front of other people, that's a family agreement. And that was one thing we were really careful about. If I was going to criticize one of the kids, I would do it with them alone and we would talk it through. But that whole thing about lashing out and saying, well, that's stupid or that's dumb or why are you doing that in front of other people, that can be very, very difficult for a child to negotiate.
And even what you said, those aren't the types of things you said to the kids in private. That's not the kind of criticizing we're talking about by insulting them. We're talking about helping them critique or look at their life and say, this part needs to change.
The final thing that we're going to talk about related to family agreements today, which you can find on page 56 of the workshop at mystronghome.com, is the idea of what's our system, what's our family system for resolving conflicts? Because a lot of these agreements have to do with just the things that you run into, you know, in life. So what's the system for resolving conflict? And I'm sure you have great great insights into this.
Well, just what you said, it's a system. It's a whole system for having a family that's at peace. So for resolving conflict, you know, you and I, you're the communicator. I was less of a communicator. And when we had our first two kids, we realized one was much more like you, one was much more like me. And they could frustrate each other to no end. And so I don't know that there's just an exact answer. It's just that you can't ever stop working on it.
Well, you kind of have to jump into the middle of it because resolving conflict is a part of what is going to make our kids succeed in life. And if they haven't seen a satisfying system for accomplishing that that's come out of their family, well, they're kind of stuck with figuring it out by themselves.
Well, I think I've talked about before, too, I didn't see any kind of conflict in my home, so I did not know how to do that. Your family was, you know, conflict was just kind of ongoing because there were seven.
And see if it stuck.
No, that's not an insult. I'm just saying you were all more talkative. So between the two of us, we had a lot to work on.
Forestream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to forestream.com and click on the radio button.
And you can email us at 4@forestream.com. Together, we're finding hope at forestream.com.